Welcome to the Visegrad Insight podcast from Central Europe on Central Europe.
My name is Lars Danielsson. I have been working for 7 years as Sweden permanent representative to the European Union in Brussels, which I left in August last year. Before that, I have a long career as a senior civil servant. I was for many years, 13 years, working with the then Prime Minister, 9 of those years as State Secretary on EU Affairs. I've been ambassador to Berlin, to Korea, and to a number of other places. So my background is very much a diplomatic one, albeit with a certain political interest. And I hope that this interview would create a small contribution to the extremely important discussion of where do we want our European Union to go in the future.
It is Monday, 19th of February, 2024. My name is Wojciech Przybylski. I'm editor-in-chief of Visegrad Insight. And in a moment, we'll play for you the interview recorded only last week at the meeting organized by the Swedish embassy with senior members of the Chancellor, the Prime Minister, some politicians and think tankers, together with two expert diplomats, including Mr. Danielsson, who have been experienced in shaping the Swedish EU presidency. And the meeting has taken place on the subject of the upcoming Polish presidency that begins on January the 1st, 2025. So only 10 months ahead of us. Before we play this interview for you, here are the most important takeaways from today's published weekly outlook presenting democratic security perspective from Central Eastern Europe and on Central Eastern Europe and prepared by our team together with fellows from all across the region. We start with Navalny's killing and the impression it has made on the politicians and civil society across Central Eastern Europe. We talk about Ursula von der Leyen expected proposal to become again the president of the European Commission. We're discussing a potential candidacy of Minister Radoslav Sikorski or Estonian Prime Minister Kaja Kallas for the position of a potential new commissioner for defense. We're discussing Hungary's position on sanctions, another package that has been blocked, at the same time focusing on the new narrative coming from Budapest after the scandal about pedophile pardoning and the important question of the upcoming vote on Sweden's membership in NATO. In Poland, we're focusing on the Pegasus case and the Special Investigation Commission, which has started its work today, focusing on the malpractices of the previous government in surveilling not only the former opposition members, but also the former members of the government and the civil society. We also mention the plan Adam Bodnar, Minister of Justice, has to reform the justice system and fulfill the necessary milestones for the release of the EU funds currently withheld on the basis of the rule of law conditionality. Last but not least, we focus on Slovakia, where the government is targeting Milan Simečka, senior columnist, one of the leading intellectuals and journalists of the country, also father to Michal Simečka, the leader of the opposition. The case proves that the battle for democratic Slovakia has not ended, but the government is taking new initiatives to suppress the freedom of speech and civic space in the country. The good news is that Slovaks on the streets and in civil society resist and build upon the experiences they have seen in the past years of countries that, like Poland, successfully overcome the past democratic decline. More stories about the region extending from Croatia and the recent protests there to the Baltics, Ukraine, Belarus are to be found in our weekly outlook. So go and check our website. But now I'm inviting you to the interview with Lars Danielsson. We have recorded the conversation right after the off-the-record conversation in the Swedish embassy together with the members of the Chancellery of the Prime Minister, think tankers and politicians, in which the questions about the future priorities of the Polish presidency came up. And part of the discussion has been focusing on the question of the topic of enlargement and how much the enlargement would play a role, and the policy of enlargement would play a role in shaping the upcoming Polish presidency. And on the other hand, the question of the future governability, EU reform, even serious restructuring, including treaty changes, has came up. So the conversation you're about to hear is a follow-up from this discussion. It's not that I put forward for the presidency the subject of governability and the future of Europe's whatever treaty arrangements and the reforms, but it's inevitable somehow after the enlargement, and this is the Polish perspective. I mean, it should be a Polish perspective, but it hasn't been developed internally. And once we open up to the discussion with the member states, other member states, we obviously need to have our own perspective. Yes. And there is, and simply saying no is too weak of a position, politically speaking. So it's impossible to hold. And that was my, just as a caveat to this. But maybe it's a good opening for yes. you to comment.
No, but I like what you say, because I'm trying to get the same sort of discussion going in Sweden on these mm-hmm. issues, which I think, I mean, Poland and Sweden, we have one thing in common here, and that is we're not part of the euro area. We know that for geopolitical reasons and other reasons, enlargement is inevitable, and that's good. I mean, we will move towards an EU of 35. It will take time, but I think that even though the treaty per se can handle also 35 members, I mean, we don't need changes for that. You have absolutely right in saying, I think that should not prevent countries like Poland or Sweden to try to form a position on, okay, what do we want? We want the union to work well. How can we also make sure that our influence is as maximal as possible in this development? And I think, you know, what I see is that even though we belong to countries who are in principle favorable to enlargement, maybe with certain conditions, but still, we have other member states who would, first of all, require national referenda before any enlargement. Secondly, would say rather clearly, we may not be in a position to accept an enlargement unless we also have a deepening and an institutional change at the same time. This is a reality. And I don't think we can handle that discussion by just saying, no, we don't want to do anything. That, because that will just prevent us from having an influence on the subject. So I think it's very important now, because we have some time, to start that discussion, to see whether, you know, is it inevitable if when we have EU 35 with countries like Ukraine and Kosovo, to have, do we need to develop the idea of a Europe in different speeds? Is that what we want? Where do we come into that? So I think the worst thing we can do is not to discuss it. Mm-hmm. And I think it's very good that you try to put this on the table. But I sense, you know, I've talked both to my prime minister and to the leader of the opposition with these issues, and they both say, no, not now, let's wait. Mm-hmm. I can understand that. It's a difficult discussion mm-hmm. because in our case, it touches on the euro issue. And we had a referendum on the euro where the Swedish people said no. So I can understand the political difficulties, but I don't see that we can just prevent it, because it will happen.
And so far we agree, Poland and Sweden, that the priority, the first order of business is enlargement. But for some, as you just mentioned, it is not the priority, or at least it is not a priority unless there is an entanglement with some sort of treaty change. So how do you make a case for enlarged EU, of all other reasons than?
I think the main reason right now is the geopolitical reason. I mean, it's a question about what kind of Europe do we want? Do we want a democratic, market-oriented, free, liberal Europe? Well, then we have to enlarge. We have to enlarge. Because that kind of way of governing both Europe and member states in Europe, European Union, is under threat. So I think that is the argument. But I think we have to admit, all of us, that this is a difficult issue. It's not easy, because it's about influence. It's also about money. And it's also about the fact that when we look at some of the countries who now are in various stages of process of pre-membership, they will have a long way to go. It will take a long time. But we don't have, maybe we don't have that much time because of the geopolitical situation. Of course, we're already now sending clear, important political signals to Russia that, yes, Ukraine has its home in the European Union in due course. But of course, at the same time, if we look at the state of reforms, even though our Ukrainian friends have been extremely impressive in what they've done under war circumstances, there's still a lot to go. Now, how do we square this circle? Now, this means, I think, that the idea, we see expert reports on this, the idea of elaborating more a European Union in different speeds, that discussion will gain. I think that is perceived by many as the way to handle this situation. Combine the geopolitical necessity to enlarge, but still maintain the sort of core principle of the European Union, which basically are, I mean, the European Union is basically something which is based on legal cooperation, which means that you have to have court systems which have trust. This is, so you know, I think it would be a bit foolish to say, no, we don't want treaty change, we don't want institutional changes because it's too difficult. We don't live in a world where it's a question of choosing between black and white, black or white. It's a question of choosing which nuance of gray do we want. And here I think we can manage, but it requires a thorough discussion in all member states. And that should start now. Because, I mean, nobody knows how long will the process for Ukraine take. But I would be surprised if it takes less than 5 years, to be honest. It may take even more. Add to that that there will probably be transitional periods in various areas, which will also take a long time. So we have time. Normally, we don't have time in the European Union. Normally, we have an immediate crisis, and then we try to solve things. Sometimes we make it, sometimes we don't. But I think it would be a pity if we don't use the fact that right now that we have time to discuss these issues. So we should do that. So I think and this is where civil society also has researchers, experts have a great responsibility because politicians in most member states will be a bit unwilling to discuss these issues right now for understandable reasons.
You've been in the heart of the political and diplomatic discussion in Europe, in the heart of Europe, so to say, if Europe has a heart. And part of the argument so far, I believe, and correct me if I'm wrong, against making moves for enlargement under the outgoing commission has been the situation of rule of law in Hungary and Poland. It was a big backstop. Now, the situation in Poland has changed. Poland is making, I would even say, experimental moves of how to reverse the illiberal experiment, the experiment, illiberal project, simply corruption and state capture. How much that makes of a difference for the process, for the mindset, for the temperature in the room again of enlargement?
I think it makes a huge difference. It has an enormous importance for Poland, but it has an enormous importance for Europe. Very clearly. I think what this will lead to is, with the Polish example, I think this will probably lead to, in the accession negotiations for these other, what are we talking about, 10 countries basically, 8-10 countries, that we will probably have issues related to rule of law inscribed in the accession treaties, which may go beyond what is in the treaty. And that will be based on the Polish example. I think this has, what happens now in your country has an enormous importance for the rest of Europe also, because we know that to do this change back again to where what is extremely difficult, maybe it's even more difficult to do that than to introduce these, let's call it, autocratic measures that were introduced earlier. So I think this cannot be underestimated also for Europe, what is being done by your country. And I know from talking to leaders of the Commission that, of course, the Commission will try to recognize this as quickly as possible and also give the proper recognition in financial terms on what you're doing, because you are now on the move, on the way to live up to those conditions which the Commission itself has put up.
I will stick to the topic of enlarged Europe, but I will ask this question in the order of priorities, and we are not in the comfortable times to pick and choose or have the whole palette of different priorities, then there is no strategy. We need security as number one strategy and point of view. How highly do you estimate the enlargement agenda is positioned in the order of many different priorities that Europe is discussing? We're ahead of adopting the new strategic agenda based on Granada Declaration drafts. And
I think it is the security agenda which is number one. Part of the security agenda is enlargement, but it's not the enlargement per se, I think, which is the highest agenda. Because there is also in some member states a lot of hesitation about the effects of enlargement, not the principle of enlargement, but the effects of the enlargement. We see this with the problems that the border countries have with Ukraine, for example. One example. I mean, when I speak to my French colleagues, you know, of course they say, well, you know, when French farmers realize that with the present CAP, Ukraine as a member will get, what is it, 1/3 of the budget. It doesn't work. We have to change something. So I mean, but on the same at the same point, and this is, I think, the positive effect about the horrible Russian aggression against Ukraine, is of course that the security agenda is now. I leave Hungary aside because this isn't is widely accepted as the most important one, and that security, it's not a question of EU or NATO, but it's a question of EU and NATO. And that is a discussion which is now, I think, is much, I would say, calmer in the European context than it used to be. Also from the perspective of those three member states who have no intention of joining NATO, that look, you know, we live in a situation where we see we need NATO with all its capacities, but we also need an EU which is a provider of security in many areas. That has. Now, the question then comes, okay, how do we get the enlargement into this prospect? And that's not easy. I think the worst thing we can say is to just say, wave the flag and yes, Ukraine should be a member tomorrow, because that will not work. So we need to have this time to, okay, how do we exactly do this? While we need to also at the same time keep up the spirits of those who are fighting the war in Ukraine. So because we know from the leaders of Ukraine that the sort of perspective of EU membership is extremely important for the morale. And we should be very, very careful with that so that we don't do stupid things. But we should also be, I mean, the European Union is not just an organization where you buy a membership card and then you're in. I mean, it takes much, much more than that. I mean, we have to accept and try to discuss the complexity of this.
And so maybe a final question then. What sort of public advice would you give to the upcoming Polish presidency where to, you know, where to look for opportunities and where to be aware of certain traps?
Well, you know, it is a rather, we live in difficult times. It sounds like, you know, something which is self-evident, but it is, things are very challenging right now. I think that what the presidents of the Polish presidency should look for as much as possible is unity. I think we our experience from our presidency is that when we are united, we can achieve things. Unity takes time, because on these issues, there are many of them which are where decisions are taken by unanimity. But I think that time is normally well spent. We should, because we're so much stronger on these issues if we can show a united front. And we've managed. It's been cumbersome. We know the example, the difficulties we've had recently with the Hungarian support for the economic package and so forth. But we managed. And I think that should be also the guiding light for the Polish presidency, which I'm sure it is. That is, don't try any adventures, because times are too risky right now. We need to keep our ship united as much as we possibly can. Which is, of course, also a responsibility, not only for the upcoming Polish presidency, but for everyone. And I sometimes, the Brussels bubble sometimes contains, ideas which are not in any way conducive to achieving unity. And that's quite maybe even dangerous.
Mm. I almost promised that it was the last question, but if we're talking about the upcoming presidency and we're talking about the regional politics, Visegrad Insight, I cannot miss Hungary and the Hungarian presidency. But also in this context, I will skip the NATO question.
Yeah.
But I will ask, what sort of relationship and preparations do you see upcoming in collaboration between Sweden and Hungary? Hungary is supposed to deliver also on the perspectives that, that member states like Sweden are bringing. Is there, and what sort of preparation there is?
When, you know, of course, I'm now not representing the Swedish government any longer. What I can note is that if we look at the entire European agenda right now, there are quite a large number of issues where countries like Sweden and Hungary actually see eye to eye. In the economic area, many of the, I mean, internal market, we're very much like-minded. So the fact that we have some difficulties and differences in certain political areas is one thing. But I think what we would like to try to do also during the presidency is to focus on the issues where we actually are quite close. And they are quite, I mean, if I look if you see it in Brussels perspective, the Corpair One part of it, I mean, the climate, there is quite a bit of, you know. But on the other side, of course, the rule of law is such a difficult thing to do, you know, because that's the very core of the European cooperation. And there we know that we don't see eye to eye. So we will try to be constructive. You know, before I left Brussels, I had some informal seminars with my Hungarian colleagues to share a little bit of our experiences. And we'd like to do that because Hungary is part of the club and we want them to be part of the club. We don't like their policies in certain areas and we're concerned about certain societal changes that we see. But you know, we want them inside the tent, not outside the tent. And we'd like to use that. We'll